no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Right from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Ah. Welcome. 14 million years in the past. Seems to pass so fast. I am Ananda. I was the High Treasurer of Lemuria.
Oh,
and
my
it is
goodness.
A welcoming presence to be back here on the petty third dimension.
Wow, well, I feel very comfortable right now. I feel like I'm in the presence of a god.
I must tell you this.
Uh-oh.
Benjamin. Is that okay. How it's pronounced?
Yes,
in your petty third dimensional world?
I don't know why you're criticizing the third dimensional world, but yeah, that's it.
6'7"?
Yeah, that's correct.
And Lemuria, we were 12 feet tall, and we had to shrink ourselves from 60 feet tall. And I can help you change this and get back to your true potential. And all you have to do is go to MLSProductions.com. And spend $39.95 on my new crystal set that you can rub on your swollen knees and your thick, knobby shins filled with
blood clots.
Yes. We will get rid of
them. Right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everybody. I feel like Andy Kaufman. I'm totally cured because of these gems. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hey, hey.
We got Henry Zabrowski.
Apparently, when you join the third dimension, you get these things called morning boners, which I hear when you're living with your sister. It is very embarrassing, nay, naughty to do. Leave your bedroom with a full morning.
All right. Well, a little insight into Henry's life living with Jackie Zabrowski there in Los Angeles on today's episode.
It's me. Yes. It's Henry Zabrowski. Yeah. It's
in
me.
In case
I'm
you
sorry.
Haven't picked up on it, today's episode is all about Lemuria, which I've had a fascinating time finding the YouTube videos. Very good robots. Best narrators of all time.
There's a lot of robot narration. There's a lot of Tempe, Arizona, Sedona, Arizona-based entertainment. This
yes.
is like really like if you want to go like if we're the desert is Hollywood. It's the production studios for the various Lemuria YouTube videos that exist.
Absolutely.
Well, the lost land of Lemuria is said to be one of the two antediluvian continents. Ooh. That existed both before and alongside the more famously known continent of Atlantis.
Could you please define antediluvian?
Antediluvian.
Antediluvian means before the Great Flood.
Oh. There you go, Henry. It means before the Great Flood.
Thank you so much. Oh, you mean we're like how my mat is dry before I get into the bathtub?
Hello. But so Lemuria, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like St. Paul to the Atlantis Minneapolis. Is that right? Is there like a little brother syndrome that Lemuria might have?
Well, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay,
we'll get into it.
All right.
But unlike Atlantis, which was first alluded to in 360 BC by Plato, Lemuria is a fairly modern myth. And that is a big part of the Lemuria story. It's just as much a tale of how a modern myth is created out of nothing as it is the history of three-eyed telepathic beings who breathe through their skin and now communicate telepathically with guys named Fred.
Of course.
Naturally. Yeah.
Why do you even have to say it, Marcus? I already knew all of that.
This is what's becoming a tradition at Last Podcast on the Left, which is this is information that is going to make you more difficult to speak to. This is information that is, it's horseshit. Honestly,
I am like literally starting to believe all this stuff, and then at some point it's all going to turn, and you guys are going to be like, "It was a joke, Ben." And you're like, "Well, then why am I wearing garbage bags?
If it's all a joke." You with garbage bags, you with the tiara with a big basalt crystal on the top of it. You got a ticket to Tempe.
I was told my blood clots were going to be cured.
So geographically, Lemuria was 6,000 miles wide and 3,000 miles long. The continent sunk into the ocean between 12 and 25,000 years ago, depending on your source, and sources are plentiful on this one.
Because all you got to do is say your source. All you have to do is be vaguely tan. You could be any race. You could be Greek, Italian, and just say you're Mayan. And then you just show, and then you have a whole blog, oh, and that's a source.
Yeah, it's like Ema Sumac, the musician in the, I think it was in the 50s, that claimed that she was a Mayan princess. Beautiful voice, wonderful right. musician, turns out. Queens.
Ah, from Queens, huh?
Queens. And that's what the... But Queens is the most diverse city in the entire world. So maybe there was a little bit of Maya in there. And then when you're in Queens, it's like...
It feels that
Mexico.
Way sometimes. I like it.
Now, besides the standard Bibliotheca Pleiades and the bad font, bad background websites, we also use the Lemuria entry in Man, Myth, and Magic and the Bob Frizzell book, Nothing in This Book is True, But It's Exactly the Way Things Are.
I am confused.
Hell yeah. But I like that. No, it's true to always hold the two right. thoughts in your head, right? That reality is reality and reality is an illusion, and let that confuse you all the time to the point that you're a bus driver.
I see.
Another good outline that I've been using is a book called The Lost Land of Lemuria by Samathi Ramaswamy. And it is a highly intellectual book that he's trying to put a lot of real information in, but it's impossible
okay.
to get through. And he has this thing called labors of loss, which is what he talks about, why there are so many different types of histories and fascinations put onto lost continents. And it's very interesting, and I will throw tidbits.
All right, Henry, I got to ask you, percentage-wise, how many of the books that you have read and or purchased are self-published?
This was published in by a publishing company called California.
I think that's the state of the public library you stole it from.
I literally have so many books with loose bindings because it was made in a basement.
But before we get to all those sources, let's start our journey to the land of Lemuria with its kind of sort of scientific origins. Mm. The name Lemuria was actually birthed from evolutionary science. Back when the whole discipline was newish, a zoologist named Philip Sclatter was trying to figure out why the fossils of lemurs were found on opposite sides of the Indian Ocean, but none were found in between.
Hmm. Yeah, because lemurs are being all cute mm-hmm. in Madagascar, but they also found a bunch of lemur bones, which I also yeah. bet are pretty cute,
oh,
in India.
Interesting.
So Sclatter postulated that a land bridge once existed between Africa and Asia, with lemurs aplenty all the way across.
That's so cute. That's so cute. All the little lemurs jumping around. And there's so few. There's few other places. I was looking up lemurs. It's hard to find lemurs in other parts of the world. They're just in this little section. And it's so cute. And they make funny little noises. And they play songs like in the movie
Interesting.
Madagascar.
They made it just a bridge for the lemurs.
Well, they didn't make a bridge for the lemurs. It's a land bridge. It was a naturally yeah. occurring bridge. I mean, it was a large. I mean, it was
trampled ground.
yeah.
Is it trampled ground?
Yes. Yeah, it was just an island. It just was a country. They're just saying land bridge because they're just saying there was land in between India and Madagascar at some point.
Do they sing when they walk across it?
Oh, yeah, it's all...
I love it.
Like, it's all of that. It's a lot of shimmying, a lot of lemurs playing bongos. You got a fake lemur king. You got a cute little, like, Ooh. Lemur lady who's, like, weirdly sexy. And I don't like that when they do that with Disney cartoons, like the squirrel and the King Arthur one that's, like, technically is kind of cute in a weird
I only like it because it messes with your brain so much.
And so, yes. Sclatter, in honor of the creatures who inspired his research, he named this hypothetical land Lemuria.
Cool.
Well, it's so much better than Stinky Tiny Monkey Bridge, which is what originally he wanted
long,
to call
it's
it.
A little long. Can you shorten it at all? Can you shorten it?
Now, when this theory was put forth in 1864, it wasn't implausible or even stupid. It was actually a pretty good idea with the information they had at the time. Hmm. But, as we all know, the most likely reason for the separating of the lemurs was continental drift.
Ah.
Also because they thought that the roads were paved with cheese in India.
The problem is, continental drift, as a scientific concept, wasn't established until 1912. That means there was a full 40 years in between that people could plug in whatever wacky bullshit they wanted into the theory of Lemuria.
And we're going to see that that's a main theme in the book, The Lost Land of Lemuria, that what they said is what's interesting. I think there's a fascination with lost continents, mm-hmm. and we're going to see it again and again, because when you have a... We have expanded as a race to all corners of the world. There's no mysteries anymore. There's no hidden frontiers anymore. So when you have a really good idea of being like, well, where do we put all of our weird esoteric thought? We'll put it in a fake island that doesn't exist anymore, and we just mm-hmm. say it blew up.
Yeah. I like it.
Well, one of the first people to plug that information in was Hitler's favorite occultist, Madame Helena Blavatsky. Oh.
She was really trying to play down that tagline.
What's that?
Hitler's favorite occultist.
Ah, let's just say a lot of people liked me. Okay, let's just say...
And like any good bullshitter, Blavatsky was a genius at inserting just enough science into her beliefs to make it all sound plausible, especially in 1888 when she wrote about all this in her book, The Secret Doctrine.
Hmm. Now, remember, The Secret Doctrine is the basis for all Western occultism that exists, right? It's like all of the tidbits, every single idea of ancient aliens, all of this was kind of buried in this gigantic, rambling book that if you attempt to read again... You're just going to be stupid afterwards.
You're just going to end up
like it's what it's becoming to me. I can't find my keys ever. I'm filled up to my receding hairline with Lemuria facts, and I just can't find the dog shit bags. I'm walking around looking for the dog shit bags.
That'll happen. It happens all the time. Blavatsky. Not an attractive last name. Sounds like when John Candy played his sister in Nothing But Trouble. Finish your beer unless you're driving. That's a Nothing But Trouble reference.
And guess what? We're bringing that Rotten Tomatoes meter up to 22%. I'm with Jackie.
We're doing a whole thing. We're doing a change.org petition on page 7. That's our celebrity and entertainment show to bring the Rotten Tomatoes score of Nothing But Trouble from 8% to 22%.
John Candy plays 4 characters.
That's what we're asking.
Come on.
He plays 2 characters. Dan Aykroyd plays 2 characters.
Who's Bobo and Dobo?
Bobo and Little Devil? Well, Dan Aykroyd plays Bobo. I can't remember the guy that played Little Devil. The other guy
was just some guy that was on the only other movie he was in was Ghostbusters, and he played a bit part in that. And then I do believe.
Really?
Yeah.
22% Rotten Tomatoes. Get that number up there in honor of the guy who played. What was it? Little Devil?
Little Devil. And back to Blavatsky and the Nazis and all this pseudoscientific bullshit. By extension, the Nazis took all this shit a step further. Hmm. Hitler just didn't spend a lot of time in his speeches talking about the egg-laying hermaphrodites, who we'll get to later.
Do you think he crossed it out of every speech? He was just like, I'm going to work
it. I said it again. This is off message. Off message. Wait a second. Can we say to Jews, lay the eggs? No, Hitler, no, I mean, Adolf, it's a fun idea. We all agree it's a fun idea, don't we?
Well, so if you'll remember from our Nazi occult episodes, Blavatsky had quite a bit to say about the so-called root races. Mm. The first was composed of etheric energy, naturally called the astral etheric race. They would reproduce by dividing, like amoeba.
Also called the Polarians.
Mm-hmm.
And they were soft, and they could take the shape of any animal that they liked. And they did that as a hobby. And all of this is real, and not just made up.
Wow, I think I would be a hedgehog.
You could be. I could see that because you're prickly on the outside, but on the inside you're soft and vulnerable.
You got a soft belly.
That's very true.
Well, from the astral etheric race came the Hyperboreans.
Hyperboreans.
We had a long argument about this on the phone yesterday.
Okay.
It's Hyperboreans.
Hyperboreans.
It's Hyperboreans.
Hyperboreans.
You're saying Hyperboreans. What are you saying, Henry?
Hyperboreans.
Marcus, don't get mad at me.
Oh.
I think technically Henry is, because it's the O.
No, well,
and
yeah.
You know what you get for that? I get a full titty slap. Congratulations to myself.
Well, the Hyperboreans lived in the cold climate areas of Earth like Greenland, Iceland, Scandinavia, and northern Canada.
Now, remember, when they talk about the root races, the idea is that humankind's have been, like, there was a concept that the Earth was a giant conscious entity, that energies were seeded by intelligence just from the universe, right? Hmm. So this is Blavatsky's idea. So we went through these root stages, and basically this is about the fate of mankind. We're supposed to get to the 7th race of human, which is then we would truly surpass. We would become truly evolved and be able to jump from Earth and become pure energy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, let's go back to the 2nd race. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
I'm sorry.
Well, when the 2nd race existed, the Earth had not yet tilted on its axis. So therefore, the entire planet was a tropical paradise.
Oh. That's kind of fun.
But instead of being ethereal, the Hyperboreans were fleshy with golden yellow skin.
Mm. Yeah. Is it weird? It makes me think of a sun choke. And I like them.
Well, they called themselves the Kimpertia. Oh. And they reproduced more like plants through budding.
Okay, that's so not as fun as the other ones.
Not as fun. Well, it might be more fun. Budding sounds better than dividing.
Well, they hadn't invented fucking yet.
And that brings us to the third race, Lemurians.
Ooh.
Here's where things get weird.
This is where it gets weird.
Yes.
Okay. So far it's been normal.
At first, the Lemurians were just beings of jelly. But they eventually... jelly.
I love that. Jelly. Oh, stop dipping your crackers in me. Just, you are a bean of jelly. I will dip my cracker in you.
That would be fucking... You just like show your loose skin. You and I both have the bottom loose skin and you just go like, come dip your crackers in my jelly. And they have to say yes because they're celebrating us.
That's right.
Well, they eventually morphed into something much more solid. According to crystallinks.com, Blavatsky believed that the first Lemurians were ape-like egg-laying hermaphrodites who communicated by mental telepathy through a literal third eye.
And they also had an eye on the back of their heads that could see the future.
That's kind of strange. That's cool, though.
All real.
Yeah, four eyes.
Yeah. Huh. And eventually they developed into more acceptable-looking human-like characters after they separated the sexes, which led to sex due to their constant desire to be hermaphrodites again, which led to their downfall. Now, this seems to be where Blavatsky's interpretations of Lemuria ends. And, of course, she continued with the Atlanteans as the fourth race and the Aryans as the fifth, given the Nazis their dumb shit nerdy background story that always seems to stop just short of the three-eyed apes.
Hmm.
But that was by no means the last interpretation of Sklatter's scientific theory. 2 years before Blavatsky, a different theory using a different name for the continent was put forth by an archaeologist named Augustus Le Plongeon.
Plongeon! It does mean, it means August the Plunger.
Wow, you gotta trust this guy so far.
Why do you have to trust Le Plongeon?
With a name like the Le Plongeon? What is it?
Le Plongeon.
Le Plongeon?
Uh-huh. You would be the biggest, stinkiest mark in France.
Oh, yeah.
Because every single time we bring up a fucking French name, you're all like, ooh. Like, it's fancy, they know more.
They don't know more. They're one of the first societies.
Well, Le Plongeon claimed that he had deciphered ancient Mayan writings that proved that the Mayans had originated from the lost civilization of Mu, spelled M-U. And it wasn't just the Mayans, either. The Great Egyptian Age is but a remnant of the Lemurian culture. And according to Le Plongeon, the Queen of the Moos, named Queen Mu, spelled M-O-O, traveled...
Which you did not appreciate. That they changed that name in the future. Because
Queen Mu traveled to Egypt, where she became known as the goddess Isis. Oh. And all this was outlined in Le Plongeon's book, Queen Mu and the Egyptian Sphinx.
Yeah. Yes.
Sounds like the world's worst erotica.
It does.
I traveled all the way from the land of Mu just to get my toes sucked by you, Pharaoh Big Dickamus.
I'm Pharaoh Big Dickamus. Let me suck on your big old feet.
Yeah, suck on my feet. Oh.
I'm shutting this up.
You wouldn't believe the book I was reading in the car wash today, Becky. It was pretty intense stuff. I got some ideas for the bedroom if we...
Hat to track.
Well, unfortunately for Le Plongeon, his translation of the Mayan language was completely and totally wrong. His biggest mistake was using letters that didn't even exist. He completely confused language with simple decoration.
Yes. He took drawings. It's like he read a thing of Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
And it was been like, magic tigers everywhere.
Furthermore, Le Plongeon didn't even translate it himself. He outsourced it to a guy named Brigeur de Bourbourg.
De Bourbourg?
De Bourbourg.
Okay.
Bourbourg!
And Bourbourg obviously had no idea what he was doing as well. According to one of his ancestors, Bourbourg was not translating because he knew the language. He was just translating from a spirit that was speaking through him, who assured Borberg that he definitely knew what was going on.
Yeah, because the spirit inside always have to be super confident about their message because they know for themselves that they don't exist.
Yep. I like it, though. So it's a series of make-em-ups.
It really is, man. Wow.
It always has been. That's the problem. I'm sitting here constantly reading, trying to, like, bring all the circle back, trying to understand more and more. And I was like, oh, yeah. All this is fucking made up by con men and idiots.
Isn't that how something gets created, though? You have to make it, and then this is bringing it higher.
No, there's actual history.
That's chaos magic. That's chaos magic. Making it.
There's actual history, though, that we can look to as what happened in the past.
Alternative facts.
Yeah. Facts are useless, Marcus. Welcome to 2017.
Well, it wasn't until decades later that the document Le Plongeon based his Mu findings on was properly translated, after which it was found to be nonsense garbage. But in the interval, a British inventor named James Churchward picked up the ball and ran with it as fast as he could, laying the framework for the lost civilization that is still built upon to this day.
Cool.
And these books were pretty popular in the day.
Yeah.
Like, these were like, that was the reason why it gained a lot of traction, is because people were really fascinated with lost continents. So these books filled with bullshit, not unlike what we have read on this show for other topics, get out there and if you don't believe in alien abductions, it's the equivalent of Whitley Strieber's Communion.
Yeah. Mm.
Where it was like these books would come out and they would go fucking viral and a bunch of people would buy them. And then that's how the rumors stay alive.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't there be a lost continent, though? Sunk down there.
Because there's no evidence for it.
It's not explored. The ocean's not explored. 98% they say not explored.
That is true.
You want to know my other science fact?
What is it?
Mars is the only planet currently occupied by robots.
Interesting.
There's no human beings. So that's like they're seeding robots on Mars. And then they will have a
future. Let them have it.
Anyway, those are my two science facts.
Well, at the age
One's more of a question.
Yeah. At the age of 75, James Churchward wrote an article in the New York American newspaper about the lost continent of Mu. In his interpretation, Mu was located in the Pacific Ocean, not the Indian. For example, Hawaii and Easter Island are but a remnant of the Mu culture.
Okay.
So after the article, Churchward wrote a 5-volume series on the subject of Mu. The first was The Lost Continent of Mu, in which Churchward claimed that the biblical Garden of Eden was actually Mu. He called it the motherland of man.
But cool. This is also at the time when they were having a massive there was a movement saying that the Garden of Eden was in China. And that's just even believing that there was a goddamn Garden of Eden.
Right.
This was a big thing that he said. This was big. I found the Garden of Eden, but you have to first believe that that's real. And at the time, they're all like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a thing.
I am quite stunned there is no fast food buffet chain called Garden of Eden, E-A-T-I-N. But also, did you guys see Pat Robertson, the grandfather of lunacy on the religious end? He came against the 6,000-year-old Earth recently. Very bizarre, saying that he doesn't believe in Garden of Eden.
Really?
Very weird. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, after the lost continent of Mu came the children of Mu, the sacred symbols of Mu, the cosmic forces of Mu, and the second book of the cosmic forces of Mu.
Gotta have that fifth book in there. The problem is it's always the fifth book is when the series goes bad.
Yeah.
Like the God Emperor of Dune. Mm. It's always the fifth book where, well, honestly, I liked God Emperor of Dune. A lot of people, but the fifth book is when the space Jews came in to Dune as well. So it's a lot of stuff. And the orgasms, and the orgasm witches, that was the other one where the guy's dick was too strong to be controlled by the orgasm witches.
Huh. Yeah, I thought that was where it just got super anti-Semitic there. When you're
No, it's just, not. Again, it got Semitic.
Yeah.
I've been doing the same bit.
Yeah, yes. It's not anti-Semitic at all. Just because they exist doesn't make it anti-Semitic.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't say the Jews came and aborted all of the children super, super late. It's like, it's not, they didn't come and steal. They were just a part of the tapestry. Good.
Well, one of Churchward's main claims, and the one that modern Lemurian scholars use the most, was that Mu was the home of an advanced civilization called the Nakal. And according to Churchward, about 1,000 years before Lemuria sank, two Lemurians named Ai and Tia decided to share the secrets of immortality and opened up the Nicol Mystery School.
Cool.
They taught that immortality was achieved through the process of ascension, making Ai and Tia the first ascended masters. Now, Henry, you have much more to say about the ascended masters.
There's a lot to unpack when it comes to the ascended masters. This is a thing I went down. I went down a long rabbit hole of, and it's a lot of believing that people using charms and different things going ding dong ding and sitting on basalt. It's a lot of basalt chairs. A lot of basalt is used in this for some reason. Portable atomic accelerators that they're also called. They sit on a box that they call the portable atomic accelerator, and they talk to alien intelligences that tell them information about the past. The Ascended Masters, in the end, is just how much are you willing to believe a 50-year-old woman who up until this point has not had a job? Where it's like, because it's people, there's several whole religions based upon Ascended Masters. There's the I Am Society, which does believe, and it's also, the I Am Society believe in a thing called the Bridge to Freedom, which I do believe L. Ron Hubbard used during his occult teachings, because it's during the 1950s. This was a side thing to what would be the birth of Scientology, was a lot of this, people talking to alien intelligence and believing they're getting information that we couldn't possibly know without talking
to
aliens.
Just to add my point of view, the Ascension, it's also a tag team in the WWE right now. They're kind of a poor man's Legion of Doom.
This is not the place for this.
Personal opinion. They're no Animal or Hawk, but they're trying to be, and we'll give them some credit for that.
But through Ascended Masters, we'll meet people such as High Priest Germain, Adama, who's another one, and then we have a lot of people. Aurelia Louise Jones, if you just want to go over to the Mount Shasta Light Publishing Company and see all of the various wares she has to sell, the meditation things that she could sell in order to, you have to give her money to talk to the Ascended Masters.
I did just fast forward to you like 20 years when you're the pitch man for that website, and that's the exact energy and the emotion you give to it.
I will definitely go through a sheer yet shiny robe phase where I wear tiaras with crystals in them.
It will happen.
So the big question here, how did Churchward know all this?
The big question here is, so how did Churchward know all this? My only job on this show is to ask, can I just do something?
Well, back in the late 19th century, Churchward was in India participating in famine relief work. There, he met a Hindu priest whose name remains a mystery.
They call me Ice Cream.
We'll just skip naming you in the book.
But my name is Ice Cream.
That's kind of funny.
Much joy have I. Everybody say, they come to village, and everybody say, Ice Cream for Ice Cream. And I hear them, and sometimes I say, please stop screaming for Ice Cream, so that I may sleep.
We're going to rename him. His name remains a mystery. It's a long one, but it's a straight one.
Well, that priest told Churchward that he was privy to knowledge of a lost civilization, the Nicol. And in addition to that, the priest even knew the Nicol's dead language, meaning the priest could interpret a series of stone tablets that also detailed the Nicol's history.
Cool.
Now, at first, the priest had no desire to share the information with Churchward.
No, I certainly won't show it to you, Mr. Churchward. Never, ever.
But somehow, Churchward, according to his book, tricked the priest into showing him the tablets and teaching him the dead language.
Hey, Ice Cream.
Yes, Ice Cream! You're funny, Mr. Churchward.
Here's $5. Here are all of my secrets.
Modern economic trickery.
From there, Churchward was able to put what he learned from the priest together with other various ancient carvings and symbols from ancient civilizations, and boom, you got a moo.
Boom.
Well, there's a problem is that he had two tablets. The Nicol tablets were supposed to tell this whole story, and no one could see them. And they were put in a basement that no other white man was ever allowed to go into.
Uh-huh.
And so they were kept separate. Always. And so we just made sure. I mean, and this is just about trusting the work that Churchward did. And I think that in the end, we're doing him a disservice by not trusting him.
I'm trusting him. I also just imagined, you know, my wife giving birth to our first child and then the doctor saying, boom, you gotta moo. and I punched the doctor in his face.
Well, even though there was trickery involved between Churchward and the priest eventually became Churchward's guru. Huh. And the two were able to communicate.
More like his gourmoo. I'm going to go.
Get the fuck out of here.
I'm going to go eat at this new place called Garden of Eden.
You're not helping the audience understand.
Well, eventually the two were able to communicate with each other using what Churchward called, quote, cosmic telegraphy.
Like how the mice talk to each other in Fievel Goes West. It's another Fievel reference for some reason.
I love Fievel.
Well, the priest and Churchward, they had adventures together. Oh. They would travel back in time together to visit previous incarnations of themselves.
Oh. Yeah, that's kind of cute. It's like the high school episodes of a sitcom in like a third season where they go back and they all have afros.
Yeah, that's true. Like when Monica would go back and visit herself when she was overweight.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I remember that.
But why would you want to go back and visit yourself? Isn't that a little, that's a little self-centered.
Well, you're not visiting yourself, you're visiting previous incarnations of yourself. So it is yourself, but also not yourself.
Yeah, back when you were like the dopiest giraffe of the tribe.
Day.
Or back
I'll never
when
forget.
You were the drunkest shaman in the village.
I'll never forget
the
day I realized I was too tall for society. I scraped the top of my head on the bottom of a stop sign. And I swear to God, I was bald at the time because we all shaved our heads for football in seventh grade. And I had a streak of blood and scar. And I was like, I'm not meant for the world. And then I realized I can't walk underneath stop signs.
Why do I also feel that... the entire Lemuria saga up to this point, which Churchward? Which Churchward was just one of the subjects at one of, like, you know how they do, like, the torture sessions at the end of Impractical Jokers? Mm. That it was just the Nicol Brothers version of Impractical Jokers, where it just he had the three brothers on the other side, like, watching through a television, just going like, okay, now tell him that they were fucking blobs that didn't know how to fuck yet. He has to keep a straight face.
Okay, now lick the hot dog and try to sell it to him. Lick the hot dog in front of him, and yep, and then try to sell it to him.
Try to sell it.
Those guys are actually very sweet. The Impractical Joker guys are great.
That is my guiltiest pleasure.
So we can all agree that Mu is a pretty fucking goofy name for a lost civilization, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, mystics agreed, and by the mid-20th century, those people, specifically Edgar Cayce, began to once again refer to it as Lemuria, conveniently ignoring that the origin of the name was owed to that adorable prosimian called the lemur.
Wow. We should have given some credit back to the lemurs. At some point, we're forgetting about the lemurs and this whole fucking thing.
So over the years, dozens, if not hundreds of writers and Angel Fire Domain dwellers have made contributions to the story of Lemuria. Now, things may get a little murky from here on out.
Okay. Now
we'll see
it's
how that's
murky?
Possible. Yeah. It's been pretty clean water so far. Nice and clear. See to the bottom of it.
We're going to try our best to keep it on track, though.
Yes. So I'm going to be laser focused. I swear to God, dog me. I'm going to be super laser focused. Let's try to really tell this story.
Gordon Michael Scallion said...
Dumb name. Bad, already bad.
You just derailed it because his name is a food. It's already done.
You're bad. It just changed the name. You can't be a type of onion and have me expect to take you seriously.
Literally 14 seconds ago. Laser focused.
I was like,
this guy's got a last name that sounds like a food. Anyway, let's talk about that for 10 minutes.
Well, also, his name is Gordon-Michael, which means he demands to be called Gordon Michael at all times.
Gordon Michael, and yes, it is scallion, like the onion.
Smell me. Just smell me. Do I smell like an onion?
Well, he said that the Lemurians began as a projection of 144 soul groups comprised of 33 million souls from Mars, the Pleiades, and Sirius. Okay. Some chose to live in the water, but others went for the plant, mineral, or animal kingdoms. And those who went with the animal kingdom took the space above ground and hung out with the giants, elves, and presumably gnomes that already existed on Earth before the 144 soul groups arrived.
That's where you want to be.
Yeah! Yeah, you bet there were fucking gnomes!
Oh, my...
Yeah, you know what I love about these blobs?
I could fucking cram my whole tiny dick into one of them, and they love it. They say, I'm oh, like, yeah, you fucking blob. You take it all the way down to my fucking berries.
Wow, Terry the gnome making an appearance out of nowhere. Terry, it's been so long. What have you been up to?
This is my Vegas, baby, yeah.
Wow, Terry the gnome. What have you been up to? Can I just ask you one question?
Fucking, drinking, smoking, and being
small. Terry the gnome, wow.
So the above-ground Lemurians were 9 feet tall and had scaly skin that changed from blue to green depending on the season. They had long oval faces, big eyes with vertical pupils, and breathed through their skin. Others say that Lemuria was inhabited by a wide array of species, including the angelic, extraterrestrial, and elemental varieties. And since these creatures were more connected to the Earth than we are, they lived, on average, about 20 to 30,000 years.
Wow.
All of this is true. And again, remember, this does sort of fit into a lot of other stories about ancient aliens, because this is prehistory. This is even before the Sumerians. What we're looking at is this is the first experiment of the aliens and whatever life was on Earth at the time, which is this weird primitive Lemurian fern gully like life that they come and speak to, like everything is the poor unfortunate souls from the Little Mermaid, and they're all living on the Earth, and aliens are just hanging out with them, thinking, oh, this is super cool. We're gonna give them a bunch of shit. We're gonna teach them about how to live, and then things go bad. But we'll get into that.
And Ursula is like Queen Moo.
Yes.
It all comes together.
Yes, Kissel. You are making fun, but technically you are correct.
No, I know, because you're using Disney references, so I understand.
Well, the reason why the Lemurians lived for so long was because if they got sick, they could realign their energies, cleanse their chakras, and heal themselves, although sometimes they needed the help of a plant or animal friend.
What do you mean, being a little plant doctor?
I just imagine them all shove them in their weird cloaca pussies being like, this is the only way to heal. And it's just the poor little hedgehogs running around just being like, I sure wish I didn't have to always fuck these things back into health.
It's a tough time, yeah.
Now, when all these different species mixed together, they became the Lemurian peoples. Still others say that the Lemurians started off as fifth-dimensional beings. As they were of the fifth dimension, they had no memory to speak of. And since they had no memory, they had no language, and instead communicated with each other using natural sounds.
What does that mean? What's that? The Garden of Eden is $3.99 all you can eat on Fridays.
Well, eventually they did develop a language, and YouTube is full of people who know how to channel it.
Yeah, it's easy, Marcus. You should fucking have a moment. If we weren't so stressed out all the time and constantly working, we too could learn how to contact Lemuria.
All right.
That is true. Now, here is an example of the Lemurian language called Salaramaru, as it was spoken thousands upon thousands of years ago.
If you can't tell, she's a woman wearing a vest. Just so you know, she's wearing a vest.
Yep.
Not just noise. She could be Greek, she could be Italian. Honestly, just looking at her, and you know she says she's Lemurian.
This goes on for another minute and a half.
Yeah.
There is something, it's comforting. It's a comforting sound. It's a German in a strange way, isn't it? Doesn't it sound a little German?
I don't find German to be comforting.
No, I understand that, but when you say it like this, well, that's a good point.
But what I will say about, she's just making noises.
Yeah?
Oh, come on, man. You were around speaking in tongues plenty.
I know, I got kicked out of school because I couldn't do it. It's improvised.
Yeah, you do. You just go,
that's it. And then you pass speaking in tongues class, which I literally had a class called speaking in tongues class.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Try it.
I hate this fucking school. I don't believe anything about this religion. I hate my parents for sending me here. I will be leaving.
It's allowed. It's allowed. He can say it is. It is speaking in tongues class. And now we'll learn where the clitoris is.
They did not have that class at the Christian school I went to. I'll tell you that.
Now, as far as animal life on Lemuria went, the only life forms that had developed at the time were birds, amphibians, and primitive mammals. However, all of them were giant in size. So, big parrots, big frogs, big rats.
Oh, I just call them rats, frogs, and parrots because I'm big.
It's kind of fun and cute, though. Again, it's cute. Yeah. That you would fit it right out there, but you would be small to them.
I know. That's what I'm kind of thinking. That's kind of a fantasy of mine.
Now, the people of Lemuria could also communicate telepathically with dolphins using the dolphin's own language called the Dolphin Codes.
Cool.
Yeah, which is also a book just all written in a... Soon to come up by Dan Brown.
The Miami Dolphins should use a little bit of that dolphin code so they could score a touchdown.
No sports talk here.
So then they can score
here.
Touchdowns
no
better if they have
in the
their
middle
dolphin
of our Lemuria expose.
And they're playing the Ravens, and the Ravens are out there. They're like, you know.
Well, the Ravens and the Baltimore Ravens are about the size of the Ravens that would
Bring
be on
together.
Lemuria.
It's all coming
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Queen Moo.
Now, these guys were also equipped with what is known as a Kunda buffer. A Kunda buffer, according to Gnostic Esoteric Study WorkAids.blogspot.com, was a physical organ located on the human coccyx.
Really?
Coccyx! My favorite part of the body.
Now, Henry, what exactly does a Kunda buffer do?
Thank you for throwing it to me, Doug Meat. I would say the Kunda buffer was in the coccyx. And what it did was the Lemurian priest scientists, which may or may not have been, once the Lemurians got solid, there's a lot of talk that the priests slash scientists slash rulers of Lemuria were actually aliens that were helping them become solid. So one thing that they did was they put a Kunda buffer into their bodies. And what the Kunda buffer would do is they knew at any point they could release their physical form and join with Nirvana, join with the everlasting peace and paradise that is the spiritual realm. But a part of what they had to do in order to reach them up to the level philosophically and spiritually where they needed to properly inhabit the spirit realm, they had to make them obsessed with the material world, which is what the Kunda buffer did. It was a blobule in you that made you like TV, that made you like the circus, all the other stuff like that, make you like iTunes, all that kind of shit.
It's a blinder, maybe.
Well, unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. And Lemuria was no different.
Oh,
because this
was
paradise, right? This was, again, lemurs are everywhere. Terry the Gnome is up inside of a big, like, weird amoeba-like character. Giant parrots. It's a lot of like, bump a bump bump. There's a lot. I still use Little Mermaid. But I imagine it all just sounds like the Little Mermaid. It's just,
frogs.
Like, fun and dancing and shit. But the problem is that with the Kunda buffers, it got them too into... the fucking physical stuff that they like, material goods.
Material.
And that's what punished them in the end.
Well, that's one theory as to why things ended. And there are plenty of different theories.
Whatever!
As to how and why the entire continent of Lemuria disappeared forever. But most of them have to do with Lemuria's biggest rival, Atlantis.
Oh.
Yeah, this is like the rich kid camp versus fat kid camp.
Technically, fat kid camp more fun, I'm going to say.
Always.
Yeah.
Now, Lemuria was in the Pacific, west side, and Atlantis was in the Atlantic, east side.
Mm.
Tupac versus Biggie. This is going on since the beginning.
And even today, there are Atlantis people and Lemuria people, and they absolutely hate each other.
The Atlantis and Lemuria divide is for people that are broken, that can't, and it's really just about what you Google first. If you look up Lemuria tales, you get a bunch of people say Atlantis is the source of the problems, which is the reason why the destruction of Lemuria happened. If you say Atlantis fables and tales, it says Lemuria is the source of the problem. All they cared about was material goods.
I see.
All this bullshit.
All right.
Well, at any rate, the general consensus of the Lemuria side is that the Lemurians wanted to leave the primitive races of man that were developing alone without any oversight. This was about 25,000 years ago. But the degenerate Atlanteans.
Wow, Marcus.
I'm not calling that. That's from thegreaterpicture.com.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of research that went into this episode.
I see all the research, yes.
Well, they thought that it was their job to rule over all, as they believed themselves to be superior. Mm. Atlantis knows best, if you will.
Ugh.
And it was also rumored that the Atlanteans were dealing in human slaves.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, they were using them for work. Because
what
do you think they use them for, Henry?
They were past them. It's really hard to say because it's not really slavery if you really truly are evolutionarily past. Like, it's not like humans deciding you are. If
and
you're an
here
alien,
we have Henry Zabrowski. He's on the Olympic. What's he playing here? Oh, he's playing the slippery slope. Let's see here. And there he goes down the slippery gold medal winner, Henry Zabrowski, going down.
Whoa, whoa.
So when Lemuria refused to fall in line, the most evil organization Atlantis had, the Sons of Belial, worked with their extraterrestrial friends, who were either the Reptoids or the Dinoids or some combination of the two, to destroy Lemuria forever.
And that's important to understand, is that Pleiadians were the ones mixing up with Lemurians, but the Reptilians were on Atlantis.
Okay.
And there's a part of it, and they're also deciding whether or not, the other problem is there's a lot of talk about whether or not Lemuria and Atlantis were actually a part of the same network, and if they were different city-states of a one giant country, or if they were entirely separate.
That's your Minneapolis-St. Paul analogy.
Yes.
Yeah, but Minneapolis and St. Paul, if there was an entire continent in
Minnesota.
Between the two.
Well, we'll just say Minnesota is the continent.
Well, the Atlanteans and the Reptoids accomplished the destruction of Lemuria using the moon.
God damn it.
Specifically, they accomplished this using Earth's second moon, as at the time, Earth had two moons.
Oh.
Malbec. Which
called. No, Malbec's something totally different. Malbec was a planet in the solar system was destroyed
between
Jupiter
and
Mars. Is now the asteroid belt.
Yes. Well, this episode's making me want to drink some Malbec. I'll tell you that. It's a wine joke. That's for our more wine listeners there.
So what the Atlanteans did, assisted by their alien friends, was first to pull the moon into our atmosphere above Lemuria. But they did it at night when everyone was asleep.
But that's when the moon is awake.
Yeah, but that's when it's there. That's when you can get at it easily.
If there's a lasso involved in this story, I think I read a fictional children's book back in the day.
It's magnets. How do they work?
So once Moon 2 was in the right position, the Atlanteans blew it up, raining moon chunks all over Lemuria.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's how you fucking do sip, dude, man.
Moon chunks, bro.
So the ensuing earthquakes caused by these moon chunks ignited Lemuria's underground gas fields, which caused more earthquakes and volcano eruptions and so on and so forth, which caused the entire continent to sink into the Pacific or Indian Ocean, depending on what you believe.
Which is interesting, because that was a part of Churchward's actual scientific explanation for why Lemuria sunk, which was that seismic activity caused lava to reach these giant gas pockets that exploded underneath it. So that's them looping back in pseudoscience into folktales.
Well, after Lemuria went down, the Reptoids took our other moon away and, as we know, replaced it with an artificial hollow structure that still hangs in the sky to this day.
I did not know that.
Yes.
You did not. You didn't pay any fucking attention during our Hollow Moon episode.
I actually don't. I put cotton balls in the headphones and it's all a lie. I'm listening to AM talk radio right now. Rush Limbaugh has a lot to say right now.
Listen to Steve Winwood.
Yeah. Well, there is, of course, another story when it comes to the destruction of Lemuria. The other story, according to themindunleashed.com, starts about 14,000 years ago. According to them, the high priest of Lemuria got privy to some information that a great cataclysm was coming, namely the Great Flood of Yore.
Oh.
And by about to come, I mean within the following 2,000 to 3,000 years, give or take. They had plenty of time.
Okay.
To tell everybody. But they didn't. Which is what I think is interesting. But a part of it, remember, Lemuria is a part of the idea of Lemuria is that it's supposed to explain why every single culture, or quote unquote every single culture, has pyramids, believes in the flood tale, believes all the stuff. So basically it's that this has gone on since the very beginning. So what is the most up-to-date version of Lemuria's story is that these priests knew that the flood was coming. And so what they did is that because Lemuria was such a peaceful era, it's such a peaceful era and perfect and past us technology-wise, you're like, okay, those of us in the know need to hide all the information that's important so it can survive the flood.
And the place they hid that information in was us. They hid it in humans, in the cells of humans, where it could be unlocked.
It's in my your body. Well, they stored a lot of it in there. My goodness gracious. Yeah, oh, yeah. It can be heard for miles and miles around. Look at that. Well, I was going to say they put it up their butts, but they kind of did in a strange way. So it's in our DNA.
It's in
so the more we unravel our DNA. Well, is that right or am I?
It has to be unlocked through crystals.
Maybe it's a paywall, like a $4.99 paywall. Okay.
It is sort of like a paywall.
Yeah, with crystals. And there's a lot of information stored in crystals. What part do crystals play in all this? I could never really figure that out.
Well, there's a lot of different stuff when it comes to crystals. The idea is they use basalt again, and then they could charge it using their prayers. And there's another group called the Aetherius group that is from the late 90s, for the 50s, and it goes into now, into our time period. It's very, they put their hands on the crystals, and they go, and then they put the information in the crystals, and then they bury them.
All right, so we got to find the crystals. Maybe they're in a skull.
Oh, don't even get us started
on
the fucking...
About it.
The crystal skulls also play a part in this.
They do?
We just didn't
get ruined.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't get into this that we couldn't cram into this episode because it's already longer than it should be. Technically, the episode's 5 minutes long, except here's the story of Lemuria. It didn't exist. Guy, everybody, donate to Patreon. And so what you have to do is put stuff into it.
Fill it up.
Fill it up.
There it is.
So according to themindunleashed.com and many other sources, the Lemurians went underground, waited out the flood, then emerged again, and that's where Native Americans come from.
Very interesting, though, because I was thinking Chief Moonchunks would be a fun name.
It would really be fun. Chief Moonchunks would be a lot of fun, but Chief Moonchunks has been dabbling too hard in ye olde peace'em pipe'em, and he can't run the meetings like he used to. He gets really
I love those meetings.
Well, LemurianConnection.com takes it in a different direction. They say that when the flood was imminent, the Lemurians petitioned Shambhala the Lesser of the Agartha Network for permission.
The poor guy. Shambhala the Lesser of the Agartha Network? That's unfortunate.
They should call me Shambhala the Lesser, but I will say it is better than my friend Shambhala the Fatter. And I think that's fine. I will take it.
Well, he was petitioned by the Lemurians to build a city under Mount Shasta in California.
Oh.
So they could escape the big flood that was coming.
Remember, during all this time, right, the Lemurians are sort of very like the Democrats. They believe in big government. Mm. They believe in the concept of a lot of bureaucratic red tape.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to talk to a lot of people before you get permission to build a fifth dimension it's at a vibration that we can't see underneath a mountain. You got to get like.
I mean, actually,
this is one of those.
Like it was more like a co-op board type of thing.
Okay,
like because they had to petition both the Agartha Network and the Galactic Federation of Planets before they could gain admission to the underground tunnels.
I think there's too much bureaucracy. There's too much red tape. But when it comes to building another nation or world. Let's talk to people. Let's get a consensus.
I think you should talk to
people. You know, then we can go forward. You know, let's keep everyone in the know.
But they had to prove the fact that they were not going to commit war at all. They couldn't be aggressive at all. And then somehow I don't know. We did a lot of. There's a lot of yada 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 here. But they proved it, and then they managed it, and then they were allowed to build a fake real city underground at Mount Shasta.
And that city that they constructed was called Talos. Ooh. And they built that city using their mastery of energy, sound, vibration, and crystals.
No Irish, huh?
No Irish.
That's amazing.
Now, Talos was all ready to go by the time the flood came, with room for only about 200,000 of Lemuria's 63 million people, making it kind of like Alternative 2 that we covered in the Bill Cooper episode. But even then, only 25,000 made it down. Apparently, the entire continent of Lemuria sank overnight, with most Lemurians sleeping through the whole thing. See, even though they had 3,000 years to prepare, it still happened just a teensy bit earlier than they thought.
So
3,000 years of pre-production.
Yeah.
And it still goes to shit.
So just be like, oh, busy day at work there building this little world. I got everything. Oh, shit, I got an extra cork in my pocket. I wonder what I was supposed to do with this cork. Meanwhile, just a small.
No.
Oh, man. Slowly floods.
But as the continent went down, the priests left behind did their best to calm their people. They strategically posted up small groups of themselves around the continent and, like the musicians on the Titanic, sang one last song as the ship went down. That song has traveled down through the millennia and is still sung today. You know it better as Auld Lang Syne. The priests and the musicians that accompanied them sang the old holiday classic until the water filled their mouths, making it the last song ever heard on the continent of Lemuria. But be assured, the power of that song shall someday return. As said on the LemurianConnection.com, quote,
hear this well in your heart, my friends, these next couple sentences. Before our beloved Lemuria sank completely, it was prophesied that one day, in some far distant future, many of us will gather again as a group and sing this song again, with the absolute knowingness that the Earth's victory is won. There will be a man named Dick Clark, who each year will sing this song. And we will know that we are true.
Absolutely. Dick Clark. Miss when he was watching the ball drop, huh?
Well, how Auld Lang Syne got to present day is because the Druids were a part of the Lemurian people. And so the Druids kept the song going throughout the years. They gave it to the Irish.
Oh, and they sing.
Yeah, they sing. Yeah. They get drunk and they sing and they got lucky sticks and weird little shorts and they love it.
Great people.
And according to a spirit guide from the seventh dimension named Kiriel, who communicates through a guy named Fred, who runs monthly long-distance healing workshops at Kiriel.com, you can hear Auld Lang Syne whenever you want. He said, quote,
if you want to hear that song, just pick up a dodecahedron, put it to your ears, and listen to it. You will hear God's song. When your Lemurian energy is raised to its apex, you won't need a crystal to hear that song.
I got this thing. I got Spotify. Have you heard of Spotify?
What?
Yeah, it plays.
Oh, dang and shit. There goes my memberships.
But there's also, it sounds like a lot of times they're trying to keep this up because they're selling various books and classes and meditation classes and different paraphernalia in order to give people with no skills a career. Because you have to look at like Aurelia Louise Jones, who runs Mount Shasta Light Publishing. She has several books, like the Talos books. She wrote several books called The Book of Talos. She now litigates against any website that puts up PDFs or versions of her book or any information she has, and you'll see them publish it, and then everyone profusely apologizes to Mount Shasta Light Publishing about how, like, because she said, basically, I'm going to sue you into the ground if you give people my books for free.
Oh, my. Sue him right into Lemuria.
Yeah, it seems not very Lemurian of her.
One of those other people is Amber Wolf, PhD, who can be found at amberwolfphd.com.
Is she a PhD?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's in her website.
All right. All right.
It's put in her website. And if she did, in fact, go to 12 years of school to be a PhD in horseshit, she deserves that degree and should put it in the URL of her website.
She's a PhD.
Well, Amber also goes as Meleha, the, quote, last Lemurian priestess.
Huh. Actually, it's the last Lemurian doctor priestess.
Amber's racket is to convince people that they are, in fact, already Lemurian, but that can only be unlocked using her products and services. Oh. This is what she writes on her website.
If you wonder, was I Lemurian? Your question is answered in the asking.
Not everyone asks that question. There are millions of people who have no inkling of any past lives, never mind lives as specific as Lemurian. Turn your question into an empowered statement. I was Lemurian. And you have a profound opportunity to explore the richness of your Lemurian Akash. In other words, you wouldn't be asking if the answer wasn't already there waiting. Am I Lemurian? Of course, old soul.
Man, do you want a powerful vacuum that really sucks up all the dust? Yeah. Then you might be an Amway customer. Isn't that brilliant? But just say, I will buy a powerful vacuum that sucks up all the dust.
People are very scared right now and very sad. Yeah. And it's very comforting to hear you immediately belong to a group.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Crips where you got to get beaten.
No.
All you got to do is just pay money. You know what I mean? It's like a cult, but a cult light. And then you probably get your pussy eaten every once in a while by a guy named Daryl that looks like everyone's stepfather.
Something must be going on in there. Who knows?
And also, it's not that expensive. Like they
We're $40 here, $50?
You know, $15, okay. You know, you can buy Amber Wolf PhD's Lemurian Codes for Activation card deck, which are, according to her website, are programmed through the crystalline Merkaba to connect the physical points on the body where the information of the Star Temple is stored waiting to evoke Akashic memory.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's $15.
It sounds a little complicated to do your own, but luckily Amber also offers regular Lemurian Codes Life activation seminars in Hawaii, where she lives. And even then,
that sounds really nice.
It sounds really nice, and it's only like $50.
All right,
like, it's not huge, and you know, if you want to try it, the next one is this December 19th from 3 to 5:30 p.m.
It only takes you 2.5 hours? That's all this takes?
That's it. Zip, zap, zap. You got it. It's easy.
Wow.
And it's part of a 3-day conference or 7-day extended retreat called Return to Lemuria.
Ooh, let's go.
Now, you know, we just barely... I would, first of all, us on the beach with all these people.
Oh,
I think
it would be phenomenal. Yes.
I think it would be a lot of fun to go hang out with these people. I think they get good and drunk. I think it's a funny crowd. There's a lot to unpack here, and we skipped a lot of stuff, unfortunately, which is even sad if you think about how much stuff. It's very complicated. But I do think that it's important to question the beginning. There is a prehistory. There are a lot of stuff. So what we're talking about, so remember that this is all the Silmarillion. Right, of the planet Earth. All of this is the pre-story before the actual ancient alien story of Sumeria. So all of this is just stuff that's cool to know. It's like, oh, you like ancient aliens? Then you better read. It's like an Amazon recommendation of stuff to read further that can confuse you and make you kind of upset.
Cool to know. You know, it's not like rock and roll history or, you know, you're not learning a lot about like...
If you want to bang out any woman or man alone in an Applebee's bar in Sacramento, California, that's how you do it.
I mean, Applebee's is advertising like, $1 Long Island iced teas every Friday in December. So they're just waiting for a lawsuit. Whatever brilliant general manager came up with that disgusting idea.
Oh my God.
But yes, in that world, that this after $3 worth of Long Island iced teas, maybe this conversation works.
Oh, there has to be a limit. There has to be. It cannot be unlimited $1 Long Island
iced teas. Information inside ourselves. The information's right there to be learned. You just gotta just go, hum. I tell you, I saw a dinosaur the other day. It wasn't even fucking there. I saw it.
$4 spent at Applebee's. That is how drunk you can get. All right, so are we done with Lemuria for now? But we'll come back to the subject later.
I think we're done with Lemuria.
Forever and ever?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're done with fucking Lemuria. Yeah, we're absolutely done. I don't want to ever read anything about Lemuria ever again.
Yeah.
And I come up with this idea for the show. I wanted to do this episode.
Well, I think this one's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It is fun, but we didn't get to the pre-Earth giants. We didn't get to space Jews. There's a lot of stuff in there because technically we could do Atlantis. Atlantis has a whole other subsect of bullshit that technically takes place after Lemuria.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, we didn't even get into like the what happened, why the destruction of Lemuria is related to the destruction of Atlantis.
This is what I'm saying. We've got to do another episode.
And like the eight, you know, the eight sectors of Atlantis and how they didn't distribute the Lemurian priest correctly.
Why did they?
Ascended Master is a whole other level of horseshit, too, and it connects to Scientology. There's a lot of stuff that's in there, too. So, why don't you just go do it? You look it up.
I'll
research
it
and put it in your heads for a little bit.
But, yeah, I just want to one more science fact. If you put air in sand, it moves like water. I saw
you just saw that on Reddit a couple days ago.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And yes. A person sat in a hot tub.
You just watching this
sand.
Weird.
It was so cool. Yes, yeah. It really was awesome. I mean, it's got to get up there. Makes a pearl somewhere, but yeah.
Be yeah, you would look like one of those big sandworms from Dune, yeah. Just filled with beer.
Well, cork it up. You don't want to get any, you know. But anyway, all right. Well, great episode. Very fun stuff. What do we want to do here? We want to thank everyone for Patreon.
Of course, yeah. Thank you so much for everyone that gave. Patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left. If you want to contribute to the show, we appreciate each and every one of you that gave,
right.
No matter how much or how little. Thank you so much. We absolutely appreciate it.
We love you with all of our hearts. And also, in the holiday spirit, we got a T-shirt out right now.
Yeah.
It's, what is it, represent.com.
/Hail Satan.
/Hail Satan. It doesn't have to say Hail Satan. We have one that says it, one that doesn't. But it's a really cool looking Santa Claus, not a, maybe more of a Krampus.
It's satanic Santa Claus.
It's
yeah.
A satanic Santa Claus.
Yeah, it's yeah. A satanic Santa Claus.
It's more like it's more like Satan with a Santa Claus hat.
Yep. So check out that shirt. Get out there and buy it. That's limited time only. And all the shirts on our merch page.
Oh yeah, yeah just get out yeah, there and go to lastpodcastnetwork.com and check out our merch page. We got it. We've actually got a lot of new shirts. Yep. We've got individual shirts now. We've got, if you want a Ben shirt, you can get a Ben shirt. If you want a me shirt, you can get a me shirt. If you want a Henry shirt, you can get a Henry shirt.
And you can get all...
Get him Henry shirt.
Yep, or just get all three for the whole family.
I'd also like to do a shout out to Murderfist as a bunch of my sketch group, Murderfist, that I'm still technically a part of because I would never say that I was not a part of it anymore. It's like we have a bunch of new videos on our YouTube. If you ever want to check it out, I think they're really fun. And also, if you're in the LA area, I completely forgot I was doing this show. I have a show tomorrow night with Murderfist and Rue Battaglia, another old ancient sketch group that no one's ever heard of before.
I love Rue Battaglia.
Yeah, it's a place called The Clubhouse on Vermont Avenue tomorrow night at 8 p.m., Saturday, December 2nd, if anybody wants to come out and check out that horseshit.
That takes me back, man. I used to love the Murderfist Rue Battaglia shows.
Great
that were
shows.
Done, what, like 5-6 years ago at the old pit?
Yeah, back in the magic days.
I got a message here from Jessica Lovelace Chandler, a comedian that I know from way back in the day. She wants to give a shout-out to Jim Hummel. So I will say, Jim Hummel, thanks for listening. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you guys so much. Follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel.
Yep.
Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one.
Uh-oh.
And follow us on all of the heinous bullshit at LP on the Left. I wish that the fucking solar flare that was going to destroy the internet would come.
Yep. All right. And
but until then, it's our only means of making money.
That's
so,
right.
So be
yes.
sure to
yes,
support
please.
Net neutrality.
Absolutely. And of course, the Last Podcast
please.
Network, Abling is top at everything political. I know you can listen to me every night as well for this month on Sirius Channel 450. That's kind of fun, too. Page 7, Sex and the Human Activities. What else do we want to plug? Wizard and the Bruiser.
Wizard and the
just
Bruiser.
Just all the shows. Just
oh,
check
yeah.
them out. And
Escuela Sangre.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, hail yourselves.
Try to say the name again. Try to
Me?
Say the name one more time.
Marcus, say it one time.
Yes.
No, you say it.
No,
man.
You say it.
No,
first.
He's asking you.
No, I know.
Escuela Sangre.
Garden of Eden. $3.99 Friday is all
that's
you can
eat. That's going to be your chain. That's going to be your Chuck Berry like chain of foods.
I don't think that's
like when you're in your 50s.
I'm like the Chuck Berry of last podcast. Do you know what Chuck Berry was doing in the bathroom? Yeah, well, Garden of Eden. $3.99 Fridays. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Hail me, if you would.
Magustalations.